welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us. On the show this week, my guest is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and we'd love to have your questions for him in our next half hour. You can call those in to 765-496-1999. You can go to your local email server and go to ask@wbaa.org and send your message there. And tweeting us a question is done by tweeting it at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Stan, I'm doing great. Thanks for the opportunity to be on the program today, as always.
Good to talk to you, as always. And you were telling me before the show today that sounds like you might have some big responsibilities upcoming in the next week when it comes to holiday stuff.
Yeah, huge. And we're not talking about encumbrances over to the 2020 calendar year with the budget. Samantha and I are hosting our first family Christmas on South Jackson Street. So believe me, I've got a long list of honeydews this weekend, but looking forward to spending time with family.
Sounds like fun. Well, let's talk about some other things that we can close the year out with. I'd like to actually start the show by talking a little bit about parking. It sounds like your city is dealing with some of the same issues that I have seen in a lot of different county seat kind of cities in Indiana. I've seen this in Bloomington and Greencastle and Lafayette, among others. You have limited parking in your downtown, just like all those other cities do, especially around the Courthouse Square, and you're trying to kind of figure out how to manage that. So let's start by saying, if you would, what do you think is currently kind of not working the way it's supposed to?
I don't think the flow in our downtown, we want to see recirculation. When people come downtown, they need to be there for a couple hours, visit establishments, grab lunch, go grab a coffee, go to a boutique. But we're not doing a very good job at having policies that promote recirculation of new consumers to come downtown. Another thing that we're not getting right now is unfortunately, we are finding that we have several forged parking permits. People are printing parking permits out. Those that are obtaining them legally are giving them to their friends or maybe their husband or maybe a cousin. And so we have all these invalid parking permits that people are staying downtown all day long. And it's really becoming an issue. And so we're trying to create policies and make strategic investments to combat these issues.
And so with respect to the parking permits, of course, one thing that could be done is similar to what the cities of Lafayette and West Lafayette have done. And I'd like to talk to you about this as a possible option for your city. They've gone around here to mounting on a vehicle a couple of cameras that take a look at people's license plates and also monitor via GPS where people are parked for a specific amount of time. And basically they can get an alert that says, oh, so-and-so has been there more than the 2 hours that they're allotted or the 3 hours that they're allotted based on where that space is in the city and what the posted signage says about how long someone can be there. That, of course, is a fairly costly option. You've gotten proposals that it looks like, at least for the first year, might cost you something like $100,000 to get it up and running, to go take a parking enforcement person from being half-time to full-time. So it's a little expensive, you know, would still probably cost you $30,000 or $40,000 extra bucks for every year after that. What does what's your cost-benefit analysis there in terms of that being pretty automated, but a little more costly?
Well, our downtown is growing. It's definitely different than it was 8 years ago. And once Prairie Creek Park is up and going and Backstep Brewery, our new microbrewery, comes downtown and our restaurants continue to grow, we're going to continue to become a bigger destination. I mean, right now we have the ice skating rink going on downtown, the Main Street Express. Encourage people to come visit us. But actually, Stan, I'm so glad you brought up that recommendation. We actually visited with Lafayette and the folks there and talked about how they handled parking enforcement. And we actually believe that is a best practice with the electronic license plate reader that you described. So this past Wednesday at our Board of Works meeting, we actually went forward and approved a purchase for an electronic license plate reader. You're right. It is an investment. It's around $60,000 actually to have that technology. But that will be mounted on a vehicle come the first of the year when it gets here. That will be able to be transferred onto a new vehicle if that vehicle should go bad in years to come. We have not decided in totality to move our part-time downtown parking enforcement officer to full-time. That's one of the first things that our new council will take up, along with looking at our current parking ordinance and making amendments as they see fit. But I do believe in the electronic license plate reader. There was actually I believe, a citizen in Michigan. I believe that challenged constitutionally a very antiquated way of marking cars in regards to downtown parking, and that's chalking tires. We are currently chalking tires. So there is a legal precedent out there in our nation that says, hey, you're not allowed to touch someone's private property like this. So I not only think the electronic license plate reader is the best practice, it'll make us more efficient, it'll probably produce more tickets, so I'm guessing we'll see an uptick in revenue, but legally, I believe it protects the city as well.
Seems like you'd have to have that parking person be full-time, though, if you wanted to generate the right amount of tickets to send the message to people that they need to be moving in and out, right?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's what I'm advocating for. I don't think it makes sense to have a part-time parking code enforcement officer in the downtown. I mean, people get used to the hours they work and they dance around the system. I presented a fiscal means to fund this in the 2020 budget. We actually have around $50,000 of additional income tax dollars that will be coming in to the city as revenue that we did not expect to have coming in, so we can maintain a balanced budget even by incrementally moving that part-time to a full-time position and adding insurance benefits on top of that. But ultimately, that will be a council decision, but we will continue to advocate for it.
I covered a very similar discussion in the city of Bloomington 5-6 years ago, which has huge traffic problems on its courthouse square. And their solution, at least at the time, was put in parking meters. This, as you can imagine, was not very popular among the people who were not business owners downtown, the people who were doing the parking. Was this something you ever considered, parking meters?
It's been chimed about amongst a couple different council members. It's not risen to the level of seriousness that it's actually been brought up in a city council meeting. Me personally, I just don't think we're there yet. The system that we're looking at is similar to what Lafayette and Noblesville does, having different color-coded areas of our downtown. So, for example, on our main corridors that are around the courthouse, that would be our yellow zone. And you're allowed, let's just say, 2 hours of yellow zone parking from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day. Once those 2 hours are up, you have to move to a different color-coded zone that's a little farther off the courthouse square to allow new circulation of new consumers to come downtown and purchase products.
So if I'm understanding you right, basically, if you park anywhere in that yellow zone, you've got 2 hours of total yellow time for that day. And after that, you're done and you have to move to another color, regardless if you're moving to a different place in the yellow zone. Am I reading you right?
You're absolutely correct. That is right.
And so in terms of that, how do you balance giving people enough time to do what they want to do, whether that's shop or eat or transact business in the downtown area? And how do you figure out what the right amount of time is for each of those colored zones?
Well, that's a great question. And I think it's a very subjective question. And I don't know if it will ever be an objective question, but that's where I think, you know, that's where the amendment to the ordinance will come into place, because it will designate, if we go to the system, it will designate the zones, it will designate the collars, and it will designate the time you're allotted to park there. Something we're going to have to listen to the citizens that we serve, take a lot of public comment into account, and also hear from our downtown business owners, because they're the ones running their businesses. They're the ones that have a really distinct need and understanding for how much time they would like to give a specific consumer to come downtown. And so that public process will be carried out. Like I said, we have it on the agenda for discussion at our first council meeting in January. We'll take in public feedback, and the council will eventually need to make a decision on that.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. You can email your questions to ask@wbaa.org or call them in to 765-496-1999. On another sort of traffic-related item, we reported earlier this month on the city moving to allow the police force to ticket people who speed through or near residential complexes, whether those are apartment complexes, whether those are senior living communities. I wanted to check in with you and see, it's not been very long, but have you noticed whether any such tickets have been issued yet?
Not yet, because within the ordinance, in order to do that, we actually need a contract and agreement that's signed by that private entity or that not-for-profit entity and the city. So with it being such a new law, I know right now, take for example, the Wesley Manor, the senior living facility in our community, they are approaching our police department. We're working through getting that agreement signed. And at that point in time, our officers can go properly on that property and issue citations. But this is something that many residents have been asking for a very long time. It's a housekeeping item, but I expect in 2020 to see those citations starting to be written once agreements are signed and filed away.
When you make an announcement like this and you tell people, hey, this is going to happen, we're going to be more vigilant about something like this, do you think that ties the hands of your officers a bit? You were just saying just there, you think there are going to be more tickets written about this. What I'm asking, I guess, is if there's a big public notice given, do officers almost have to write tickets when they see such a thing? Is it harder for them to justify giving somebody a warning?
Well, I think it's our job to speak to the people we serve and put laws into place that we believe best serves them and best keeps them protected. I am not a police officer. It's the police officer's responsibility to uphold the law and enforce the law at their discretion. By no means am I telling our police officers by passing this ordinance, we need a 5% increase of quota in traffic violations or speeding violations or moving through a stop sign, that kind of violation. No, they're professionals. I respect their judgment and discretion, and I know that they will enforce this law properly, just like they do every other law in our city.
Speaking of measuring things, we talked last month about you trying to get more people to come to the city in greater numbers to visit all of the holiday decorations and attractions that you've got going on. Do you have any way of measuring whether that is happening? Is there any information you get about revenue or traffic flow at certain times, whether it's in the evening, people going to see the light show in TPA Park? Any way that you have that you can quantify whether you are achieving that goal of getting more people to come in for the holidays?
Great question, Stan. So subjectively, my wife and I last Saturday, we had a good couple friend of ours come down from Kokomo, and we went and ate at a local restaurant, and then we went out and saw the lights. It was around 8 o'clock on Saturday night. And for those of you who are familiar with the geography of Frankfort, we came down Jackson, and we actually got stopped at the intersection of Jackson and Kiger before we turned back east to go to the park. It took us 2 hours to go through the light display. Now, a lot of these license plates that, you know, I looked at around our automobile, they weren't from Clinton County. So that's cool. So subjectively, that tells me we are attracting big groups of people, perhaps people that have never been here before. Objectively, what we're doing is with our new announcement sign, it's an LED digital sign that we purchased here about a year ago through a grant with our police department, that actually has a traffic counter on it. And so we have a one-way corridor through the parks, through the park to see the lights. And we actually will have this traffic counter on Burlington. So as every car exits, we'll be able to count the number of cars. And so come January, when all the lights get down and this process is concluded, I'll be able to report on the show here exactly how many automobiles came through to see our light display.
Well, good. I want to know that, because that's an interesting number, and that's a good way to kind of measure your success in this whole endeavor. I have to ask, though, 2 hours to get through the whole thing. I'll bet there are people in Frankfort who are probably not used to having to wait 2 hours in traffic for anything.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm getting Facebook messages and people complain about it. And listen, I get it. I understand. I mean, yeah, it takes 2 hours. But on the flip side of that, one huge goal of our community is attracting more people here to spend money here, go to our local shops, go to our local businesses. So I think my message is we can't have it both ways. We can't have the convenient fly through the park in 7 minutes and go home to watch our Christmas movie. And we can't have needing people and wanting people to come here and creating Frankfort as a destination and this place where people come for this great new holiday tradition. So I just ask the people of Frankfort, keep that in mind. I know it's a little bit of an inconvenience for us, but for the whole of our community, it's a good thing, and we're accomplishing a lot and helping our local economy, and I'm all for that. I think it's great.
Do you have a plan to check in with local retailers as well to see if they will offer up whether they have made more revenue, say, at the end of November throughout December, to see if there is that sort of economic impact, people saying, well, if we're going to have to wait 2 hours, we might as well go and get a soda or something?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, our Frankfort Main Street Express, which is an enclosed trailer that has music and has heat, you can see Santa, you can ice skate. You know, when we always ask people on that ride when they get their ticket, how many of you are from Frankfort? So Frankfurt Main Street helps track how many out-of-town visitors we have going through that process. And then through Frankfurt Main Street, we stay very in tune with our downtown retailers, especially. So we'll hear reports from them, and then I'll definitely check in with the Chamber of Commerce and see what kind of feedback they're getting. But I'm guessing it's going to be nothing but positive.
Got about 10 minutes left with Frankfurt Mayor Chris McBarnes on Ask the Mayor today here on WBAA. Call in your questions to 765-496-1999 or email them to ask@wbaa.org. Our reporter Emily Seiberg reported yesterday the city is getting back to its regular recycling schedule. It's something we've talked to you about on this show, and getting away from that quadrant system you've had to use for, I think, a little longer than you initially expected you'd have to use it. So I wanted to ask kind of a 30,000-foot view question, which is this. What did the interruption of that normal plan of recycling and the need to find a substitute plan teach the city about its processes, about how you might find efficiencies, things like that?
Well, I think it taught us that we are very good at partnering with folks and thinking through problems. What happened to Warner's was a terrible situation with that fire. But through that, I think we found our resiliency. For example, we opened up what used to be the old recycling barn in our city. We moved different pieces of equipment in and actually found a couple of employees from our side to join with Warner's employees to recycle at our plant so that we could keep that at least the quadrant cycle being picked up on a weekly basis. I also learned that people in Frankfurt, they are very good at listening to instructions. I mean, that was a big change, and I'll be able to get you the numbers, Stan, the first quarter of this next year. But, our recycling numbers didn't drop off in a huge way by any means. So I think the way that we're communicating is effective. We can always become a little bit better than what we do currently, but I'm pretty happy with that. But like you mentioned, we are going back. It will be the second Wednesday in January, because the first Wednesday is January 1st. There will be no recycling pickup on that Wednesday. But the following Wednesday, we will have full city recycling picked up, single stream cycling, just like we always have. The one thing is we won't be collecting glass. So don't put glass in your single stream recycling. But you can bring that glass out to the street department, and we will take it from you there.
Hey, I'm glad you said that. That was going to be my next question, is why are you making that change now?
So that is something that we've worked out with Warner Recycling, just their ability and their technology to sort that glass in their plant. That's a request they've made of us, so we are going to acquiesce that request. And we'll continue to work with them in the future to see if we can remedy that. But again, if you want to collect that glass separate from your other single stream recycled goods, you can do that. You can bring that out to our street department, and we will make sure it gets recycled.
Well, one of the things we found out as we were doing some reporting in this newsroom earlier this year is that glass tends to pose something of a hazard, because if anything breaks, it tends to be seen as an entire contamination of a recycling stream, and a lot of that stuff winds up going into landfills rather than going to be actually recycled. And it gets to something that I think is kind of the bigger, gorilla in the room with respect to recycling, which is a lot of the experts we heard from in our reporting said, hey, the people on the front end are going to have to start putting in some more effort. You're going to have to start doing things like separating out the glass, and not only that, but taking the paper packaging off of the glass so that it's its own thing, and so the paper goes in one spot, the glass goes in another spot. Do you think that your city is kind of facing a little bit of that right now, where people are going to have to start, you mentioned them being very good at listening and following directions just a minute ago, might you have to give them some more direction about, here's a little more effort that you, the recycler, the person who wants to do well for the environment, might have to put in a little more effort on the front end?
I think so. And, everything happens in phases in life. And I try not to rush the process, because if you rush the process, it's going to directly impact the end result. So when you look at when our city first implemented single stream recycling, that was a big change. Just asking people to do that and being very conscious about their paper and their plastic and their corrugated cardboard, not putting that in the trash can. And, for the little city of Frankfurt, we do a heck of a job with our recycling program, keeps thousands and thousands of pounds of trash not going to our landfill. And as you and I have talked about before, it reduces cost to our city of our city budget. It brings in additional revenue so we can build more sidewalks and put in more playground equipment. So I think you bring up a good point, Stan. I think this is just a natural next step in the process that as the recycling program as a whole in our nation becomes more refined, that we all as individuals and good stewards of this planet are going to have to do our part to make sure this happens properly. And for us right now, that means making sure you keep that glass out of your single stream recycling. And if you'd like, bring it separately to our street department on Burlington Avenue, and we'll take care of that.
Let's talk for a minute about the new aquatic center plans. I guess those are somewhere between 60 and 90% complete. And the recent update you've gotten says could cost in the neighborhood of $8 million. But we've been talking particularly with Mayor Wazworski of Lafayette, who's been having some problems with getting bids for his municipal projects down to where the city has said we can afford it. He's pointing out construction is very expensive right now, more expensive than he's seen, and he's been mayor for a good long time now. Some projects coming in nearly twice what the city thought they could afford. How do you factor this in as you are trying to build this new aquatic center? What happens if, when you get bids early next year, they are considerably higher than you thought they would be?
You know, it's a great question. And Mayor Wazworski is absolutely right. It's just a signal of our economy. Trade deals, a lot of different things impact this situation. So what we're doing is, Stan, to prepare for this, we are bulking up our bids that will go to the street the first quarter of next year with roughly $1 million in alternates. So we plan on having almost an a la carte menu that if those bids come in higher than expected, we can piece some things out and ultimately have multiple phases of the aquatic center construction. Doesn't mean that phase one won't be great. Doesn't mean that we won't have a great aquatic center in the city of Frankfort come Memorial Day 2021, but we're being very conservative with bulking up this bid package with multiple alternates. Another thing that we're doing is continuing to go after private sector dollars, much like we did with Prairie Creek Park. We're right around $800,000 now to complement the public sector dollars to get that project done. We have one major gift announcement thus far for the Aquatic Center of $250,000. And we're pushing our Parks Department and all stakeholders involved to continue to raise dollars. I would like to get to at least $500,000 in private sector contributions. So I believe private sector contributions with a heavy alternate menu will ultimately give us a project that we can afford and a project that can meet the demands of this very strong economy, knowing that it will probably come in higher than we expect.
You know, this is something you and I have talked about a number of times on this show, is trying to find private sector investment to help pay for things and help get projects off the ground. Do you have staff in your office, staff that are city employees who are tasked with going out and making those asks, you know, development officers or somebody like that, somebody whose job it is to try to find that money?
Well, you bring up a great point. And, you know, being a third class city, a smaller city, I end up doing a lot of that as mayor, and that's quite all right with me. I enjoy doing it. I did it for Ivy Tech. I did it for Prairie Creek Park. But bringing on Annie Bacon, our community development director position this year, puts us in such a stronger position to raise more private sector funds. Annie will have easily paid for her salary with the amount of money that she's helping us go out and collect in private sector donations. So to answer your question directly, Annie is really in charge of a lot of the fundraising efforts for the Aquatic Center, along with our park superintendent, Travis Sheets, which unfortunately will be leaving us January 1st, but the next man up coming into that position will be expected to take on those responsibilities along with Annie and myself.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because obviously we've dealt with Annie in that role, and the word development can sort of have different meanings depending on who you're talking to. Here in the public radio world, it means get us money. Elsewhere in public life, it can mean just help work on projects, but maybe the money is dealt with differently. So thank you for clearing that up. But you were saying a second ago that maybe the scope of this project might have to, at least in the near term, be downgraded a little bit if the bids come in too high. Is that right?
That's correct. And at the last city council meeting where we had HWC engineering here, we actually showed multiple pictures of what the aquatic center could look like phased in. For example, in phase one, we have multiple slides. We have a raft slide. We have a slide that just a human being can zip down. And so, you know, one phase in might be that we build one slide and then in the future add on a second slide or a third slide. So when I talk about phases, I mean just additional amenities that really take the aquatic center over the top. But we also have to be very fiscally responsible and understand in this economy, the bids could come back high. And we do have plans to mitigate that scenario if it does happen.
So in terms of mitigation there, you know, are you prioritizing one amenity of the aquatic park over another? Do you have a list of we want A before B before C?
Yes, and that came out of our public process of visioning with our community before we put this entire plan together. We wanted it to be what they wanted. And one thing we heard time and time again, Stan, was a lazy river. I believe from the council's perspective and my perspective, that lazy river is incredibly important, and that will be prioritized probably the highest on this project, along with your basic swimming area and a zero depth entry area to make this pool handicap accessible and ADA accessible so people across the board can enjoy this. So those two things I say would be top priority above other alternates that come back in the bid package.
With respect to trying to raise money for this, is it easier or harder to try to raise it all at once versus having to go back to people and say, all right, we're into phase two, phase three, phase four? Is that a little harder? Do you get donor fatigue if you have to do it that way?
I think it makes it a little more difficult, but what makes it even more difficult than that is the fact that we've raised $2.1 million for Ivy Tech in the past 6 years, that we've raised close to $800,000 for Prairie Creek Park, and now we've got another giant capital fundraising campaign. You know, the median income in Frankfort, median household income in Frankfort starting the first of this year was right around $39,000. I mean, I'm very proud that we're a hardworking blue-collar community, but look at all these dollars that we're raising. It makes it more difficult that we have multiple capital projects, but I think it says a lot about our private sector in our community, our small businesses, households in our community, that they want to go the extra mile and they want to give back because they understand what these amenities will mean to Frankfort, creating a better quality of life, better quality of place, and attracting a stronger workforce, which will bring more private investment in the future.
What about the timetable? Do the how the bids come in affect the timetable of trying to have it open by the traditional start of the swimming season right around Memorial Day in 2021?
Well, we're going to be very quick to get these bids on the street the first quarter of next year so that we can get our contractor selected and the construction process started. What I will tell you is another mitigating maneuver that we made to make sure this project comes in on budget is we allowed two construction seasons for construction. So rather than saying we have to have this pool built and open by Labor Day, Memorial Day of 2021.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. Happy holidays to you and yours, and we look forward to doing it again in 2020.
Stan, thank you. God bless. Happy New Year.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to join us at the same time next week for our conversation with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We will be pre-recording that show, so do be sure to get your questions in very quickly to ask@wbaa.org for that. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.